Testing 1, 2, 3. Hi, my name is Ann Wheelton, and I am doing an interview this afternoon, 2 o'clock, at the Chincoteague Island Library. I'm doing an interview with Greer Derrickson for the Chincoteague Island Library Oral History Project. And it's a bright, beautiful summer day, and we're enjoying it. And Mr. Greer's just come in from being out in the water. He's full of good stories and things to teach me and tell me. All right. First of all, Mr. Greer, tell me where and when you were born.
November the 27th, 1919, here at Chincoteague.
Okay. Now, where were you born? Which part of the island? Up the neck?
North end.
North
up
end?
Up the neck.
Up the neck. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me a little bit about your life when you were small and a little bit about your family history on the island?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Really, it's hard for me to remember much back before school days.
Mm-hmm.
When I first came to school in the Chincoteague High School or elementary school.
Okay.
In 1919, when I was born, I guess it was probably, I think I had to be 7 years old when we were allowed to go to school.
Okay.
Or required, I guess. Before that, it was just a matter of romping around with one or two neighbors on the north end, and most of them are deceased by now.
Uh-huh.
And but in those days, why we didn't have any blacktop roads. It was a sandy road with oyster shells.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard that before.
Oh, probably. Yeah. I've seen pictures from Rosalie. Uh-huh. She has pictures of the old roads.
And it was mighty difficult to ride a bicycle on it. I had a bicycle for Christmas along about then. But I remember one time I got stuck in the sand and oyster shells about halfway between where I lived and what we call the creek.
Mm-hmm.
It's a creek section there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
Oh yeah.
You know where the
mm-hmm.
creek is?
Mm-hmm.
It's that little waterway that goes through that settlement there, about halfway between town and the north end.
Mm-hmm. Some people say they used to live in the creek.
Yeah.
Some people lived up the creek. Some people lived in the creek.
Yeah. Well, really, I guess it's the identification of it is Lewis Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis Creek. But my aunt kept a country store up there at the time, and she sent me to town on my uncle's bicycle.
Now, what was her name?
Lottie. Lottie Derrickson.
Lottie Derrickson, okay.
Uh-huh. And her husband was named Clarence, my uncle. Where we used to call Turkey Hill is not too far, really, from where Rosalie lives.
Uh-huh.
And I was coming to town, and you know, on this errand, and anticipating what I had to do for my aunt, and not realizing that this bicycle I was on was not a coasting type, that way you can stop puddling.
Uh-huh.
And it was what we call a making break. The things kept going, pedals kept going around, whether you did or not.
Uh-huh.
And that threw me off. You know how it would do. It caught the back of my leg on one side, and I bent the bicycle up the fender parts, you know. And that was a bad journey.
Uh-huh.
But as a child, that was one thing I remembered.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't get to come to town much until I started going to school.
Really?
Yeah.
So you stayed up on that end?
Yeah, there was just a few friends that I had.
Did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, I had two halves, a brother and a sister.
Okay.
And a whole sister, Alice, and she married, her husband was Charles Lee Watson.
Okay.
And of course, her first marriage was by a jester and had two children by jester.
Now, were you the oldest of all the children, or were you the youngest or in the middle?
Of my family, mm-hmm. I was the youngest.
The youngest, okay.
And they always let me know that.
Is that a good thing, Greer?
Alice always said I was Mom's pet.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, I was the only boy child. Alice and I, but we enjoyed living, and we enjoyed the bay.
I was going to say, did you spend a lot of time on the water?
Yeah, we lived at Blake's Point until I left to go into service.
Okay.
And we were at summer days like today, we'd be testing the water, see if it was warm enough.
Mm-hmm. You get in already,
yeah.
Huh? Did you have a little boat or anything?
My father always had boats of all kinds because he, in the wintertime, he guided for, we called them sports.
Right, like Bill did for the hunting lodge up at Pope's Island, right? Same kind of thing. Is that what your father did?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes. He had two floating shanties. They were houseboats.
Okay.
And each of them, well, one of them had a couple staterooms in it.
Wow.
Which would, well, they were just sewed together. They weren't mm-hmm. elaborate, but they were private.
And they were floating shanties.
Uh-huh.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And they had a hallway, and the front end of the shanty was a place where after the supper meal, all the sports would go down and play poker, and they would drink right much. And
now, who had this place?
Well,
I know Black and Decker had Pope's Island or whatever.
Uh-huh.
People from the Al Decker.
Well, this was owned, when the hunting season was over. The floating shanty wasn't used much. It was brought back to a harbor, and mostly.
Mm-hmm.
We did use it sometimes for pleasure, the family would. And
so who owned it? Did you all own it?
My father owned it.
He did own it, okay.
And he owned two floating shanties, but this one was named the Agnes.
Okay.
And the people who would come down owned Quartz Marshes at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Presently, I think Donnie Thornton and the Collins family owns Quartz Marshes.
Okay.
But they would take it up there, and they had a little place they'd pull it in where they dug out into the marsh and had a walkway, and they'd hang their fowl on the side of the shanty.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in those days, I believe the winters were much colder.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'd just hook them in underneath the bill and just let them stay there.
Uh-huh.
And usually it was on the cold side, and the shanty was where very little sun hit it. So they would be down for a week, sometimes 2 weeks. But they said it's like beef. It's not, the ducks aren't good until they're cured. So really, I thought they were almost rotten. You know? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How about that? Well,
they had to be, you know. But I don't know. People just have a taste for things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I would participate as I got maybe in junior or senior high. On occasions, I'd get to go up there. If some of the sports would bring some of their children, it would be a special occasion. I'd go maybe for a day or a night.
Now on Sundays, I know Rosalie talks about a lot of times people went from one end of the island to the other end of the island to go visit their people.
They used to visit a lot.
So did you get a lot of people that came up to visit and your mom made a big meal on Sunday?
Yes.
Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, they had more time. Seems like then, now the pace of life is such that when you're not out either to church or on some business about town, the television and, of course, computer, like Hal, Mr. Halligan, he's on the computer all the time, probably. That consumes people's time now. But there was more time for visiting, and it was a great deal of pleasure in visiting people and having those to come see us. I remember one time, you're a Wilton, aren't you? Well, that run crossed my mind before I came down here.
There are a lot of Wiltons up your way.
Well,
there were.
Descendants.
That's what I'm saying, there were, yeah.
Well, they're from the D.J. Wilton family. And they moved down to North Carolina, Morehead City, in that vicinity. And I remember one occasion, my mother's, I guess, cousin, my grandmother, was a Wilton.
Okay.
She married a Peterson.
What was her first name?
Hester Ann.
Okay, Hester Ann.
Hester Ann. And she married a Peterson, who came here from Denmark.
Wow.
He came from Denmark. I might get off on a tangent.
That's okay, I'll bring it back.
Because I go from...
You're okay.
My grandfather, I would say, anyhow, it was important to me, as it crossed my mind, to mention that because of your relationship into probably the same Wilton family. These people that were descendants of my mother, cousins, I believe they were, they married, it was on their mother's side, they married a man by the name of Seaman, and he had a thriving, popular restaurant in Morehead City.
Okay.
And they came up to visit. Well, it was summertime, and they hadn't seen me, my mother's eyeballs, and I was to bed. But we all, as soon as it got warm enough, we'd go barefoot. And we always had a place outside the back kitchen, outside a platform where Pop always had two or three buckets of water to wash your feet in. And that was one thing that if my mother wasn't home, that I had, I was compelled or supposed to be, so it wouldn't get her sheets dirty. Make sure you wash your feet if you don't get a bath. Well, after dark, you see, the water got chilly, and I didn't want to stick my feet in that cold bucket of water.
It wasn't as inviting, was it?
No. Well, she was going to show her baby boy off, and I was to bed, and she brings her friends up to the bedroom. I said, I don't remember it except the story that I'm telling. And she throws the sheets back, and there I lay with two paper bags the color of this, with tied onto my one on each foot. Do you have any idea what that was for?
Because you didn't wash.
Because I didn't wash, that's right. I didn't wash my feet. And that embarrassed her, and that's what it was. But I've never forgotten that story as a child.
Well, I have to ask you, do you know how to scull a boat still?
Beg pardon?
Do you still know how to scull a boat?
Scull? Oh, yeah.
I was just wondering. Elvie taught Natalie how to scull when she was little. That was the first thing you taught her how to do, row and scull before the,
Yeah.
You still remember?
Oh, yeah.
Did you spend a lot of time sculling boats out there?
Oh, yeah, you had to scull when you come to deep water. And we didn't row much. Didn't row a whole lot. But you had that one oar you pulled with. And They had them what they call shoving paddles, and they had a regular oar which had the bottom part was flattened out like, you know, an oar is. But the shoving paddle was pretty much a straight, but it did taper and flatten off like an oar. But they were used to push boats, and you could push them pretty fast, you know, but it was exercise.
Good, you're probably in good shape too.
Yeah.
You used up all the energy as a little boy, because by the time you got him, you were tired.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell me, since you lived through the Depression years, what was the Depression like? Do you remember anything of that period?
Well, that's what drove me away from Shankatuck.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know whether Rose Lee's... her husband, Bill. Bill Savage, and a dear friend of mine, he and I were up at Polk's Island Hunting Club in the summertime, clamming. And we were up there because it's right on the Maryland, Virginia line.
Right.
And there was more clams over in Maryland than it was on this side. So we would go over there, and we never did get caught by the officials. And that was my last trip before entering into the service, because clams in those days were 2 cents and a half each. $2.50 a thousand. And the horseflies were bad and the mosquitoes terrible. And there wasn't no future. There's no future here. Very depressed area. And my uncle was in the Coast Guard, and that was a steady income. He was a surfman at the time. Of course, that rating phased out when all the life-saving stations were not demolished, but disbanded. And anyhow, that was the influence to get me in the service, because I was looking for a place that would give me some income, but mainly a roof over my head and three meals a day and a sea bag full of clothing. And that satisfied me very much to commence with. And the Coast Guard was very good to me, and I think I reciprocated.
Now, do you remember how the Depression affected people on the island? Do you remember anything about that time period?
Yeah. Well, we were all poor, but some were more thrifty and more energetic and better ideas about just like, I never did have to worry about my clothing or food. It was always there, but some people did. Some people did. But they lived on, really, it was very few, but what had clothing, and but it was tight. It was tight living. That's what drove me away from Shankatuck, was no income, nothing to look forward to. Even though in those days, The oyster business was good.
It still stayed good during that time. During the Depression, really?
Yes.
Okay.
And they had market to the northern market.
To New York.
And you go back far enough, we didn't have the bridges.
Right.
And we had the barges.
That was 1922, right? When the bridge came over?
Was it 22?
Was it
22? I was thinking.
Or was it later?
Later. I was thinking about 27.
Okay.
I was thinking that. Now, I could be wrong. I think it's about 27.
Okay. Because the Depression was early 30s, right?
Oh, the real Depression that I remember was 28.
28, okay.
Yeah. When Wall Street
crashed.
Right,
right, and the crash.
Was it 28, Allie?
Actually, it was a little later.
Yeah, I thought it was the early 30s.
Started going down.
Right after that.
Yeah, okay. They crashed, I think.
So actually, do you think that because of that, though, it spurred a lot of people to try different occupations? Because I know that you were a master of many occupations. It got people to be creative.
Well, I didn't become creative till after I got out of the service, really.
Okay.
And it was then that I started hopscotching around various
things. That's why you're so famous. That's everybody I talk to when I ask them about you. They say, oh, yeah, he's done this and this and this and this and this. And they have all this.
Yeah.
What were some of your occupations?
Well, when I first got out of the service, my brother-in-law and I...
Now, who's your brother-in-law?
Charlie Watson.
Charlie Watson,
was Alice's husband.
Okay.
Really, that wasn't the first thing. When I come home, I didn't have any place to live, so I had another brother-in-law by my half-sister. They had been, in those days, that was, let's see, 37 and 45, after World War II was over.
Right.
I got out of the service after about 10 years, 9 or 10 years service.
Okay.
And, I came home. I had enough of the service, and I came home, and my half sister's husband owned some poultry houses. Right, that was almost the beginning of the poultry industry on the Eastern Shore.
Oh, really?
Uh huh. And this whole island was saturated in short order with small 5,000 and 10,000 houses.
So it started out with your...
Not I didn't have nothing to do with it.
You don't know when it started.
I only participated in it. But it was along about, I'd say, in the 40s, when it was introduced here to Chincoteague by one man or two that came down from Delaware, and Mr. Lev Lynch. Mm-hmm. Levin Lynch was one of the first people who had a poultry house on Chincoteague. And that turned out to be very profitable for and people got so excited because it was some of them were making more money than they ever did in their life.
Wow. But, I know Rosalie's dad had a poultry farm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Claude Merritt, he had them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Rosalie's dad.
Right.
Well, anyhow, from that, and at the same time, I went up to Ocean City, and he was a sheriff of that county. That's Worcester.
Worcester County? It, that is Worcester, Mission City.
Parcomico. I don't know one or the other. Anyhow, he had some cattle on the beach, and a man by the name of Bounds. Together, those two had cattle on the beach, and I went up when they were going to pen them to sell off the calves, and I bought, I think it was about 20 calves.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't cost much, you know, still. We hadn't really come out of the Depression. But that was a turning point in the Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He put a chicken in every pot and a car in every garage.
Mm-hmm.
That was a turning point, and the United States hadn't stopped since to where we are today. It's just been up, up, up now. We have some blitches along the way, but it's nothing but... been prosperous ever since.
Now, can you tell me about either your pig farm? I've heard some funny stories about your pig.
I got this poultry house from a brother-in-law, and I didn't have it too long before. It was a short while after that. Yeah, one of the houses, it was a 10,000 house and a 5,000, and one end of the 10,000, I decided to raise these mink.
Oh, you're doing the mink first, okay.
Yeah, and of course, I did get these cattle from up Ocean City, calves, and grew them up, and I had some ponies. I got some ponies.
Did you ride?
Yeah, I had a riding pony.
Uh-huh.
And I got them from Mr. Clarence Beebe. And I kept them for a right good while until I moved out of the woods up there where Bob Halligan lives. Following that, you asked about the minks. It was during that time, yeah.
How did you get into mink farming?
Well,
how did somebody
the last tour of duty I had, I was out in the state of Washington, and they out there it was popular. Mink farming was popular out there, as well as silver fox farming. And I knew that we had some natural mink here in years gone by, but not many. But it was conducive to fur brown animals in the wintertime. They produce...
There were some natural mink here at one time? How about that? Yeah. I didn't know that. I never heard anybody say that.
Yeah, well, there's an island in Northampton County, Mink Island.
Okay.
On the ocean side. I don't know how it must have got its name from a population of mink down there. But there weren't many mink around. It seemed to be profitable, or I envisioned it being profitable, but it didn't work out.
What do you do to have a mink farm? What do you do as a mink farmer?
First of all, you got to get some stock.
Okay, where'd you get that from?
I bought some. I learned that there was a man in business in Cambridge, Maryland.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And also, I'd been reading up on it. I got some addresses of people in Webster, New York. So I got two different strains from different people for crossing them. And I started with them, but I no sooner got started and got pelted out a few, maybe a year or two, after I had an increase with young animals. But that didn't last very long, and that's one reason why I've been in so many darn things. If it's not profitable, I'll soon get away from it.
Now, but where did you sell it to? I know in the 50s, my mom had all kinds of mink soles and fox and everything, and we still have them. But then, where did you sell it to? Where did you send it to?
I would execute them. I used an electric shock that gave them instant death. And I pelted them and refrigerated the pelts till I accumulated a few in the winter months. And I sent them to New York and had them made into neck pieces.
Sold
everyone here.
Did you really? You sold them all here on the island?
Sold everyone here.
How about that? That's really neat. So you brought them back instead of sending them away. That's really neat.
And I remember the people I sold them to, Roy Twilley. Do you remember Roy Twilley?
I've heard of Roy Twilley.
Roy's mother, Miss Flossie, she was my mother's cousin.
Okay.
First cousin. So I sold her one, and I sold a Hudson up in Depot area one, and quite a number. Quite a number.
That's so neat.
And Elizabeth got a neck piece and a stole, like. I don't think she called it a stole, but it was two or three. Two on the back, one in the front.
My mom, they put them in our closets, and I can remember as a child looking in there and having those eyeballs look at you, thinking, oh my goodness. But it was very popular. I mean, all the women wore them to church and the different occasions were dressed up.
They sure were dressed up.
Oh, that is so neat.
And of course, that was an industry in itself, and I knew very little about the genetic, the technical things about mink farming. But there was people that were getting into it, and I'll tell you the reason why I really got out of it, and I pelted them off that way in neck pieces. We had just finished World War II. It was a few years had gone by. And the market Russia, one of our allies during World War II, they were exporting furs to the United States, and they had what they called a Kolinsky, which was it wasn't a mink, but it took the place of a mink.
Mm-hmm.
It drove our markets right down. And New York was the most popular place for furs, seemed like. And they could take that and sell it. It's illegal, but they're doing things. They're, instead of selling Kolinskis for a mink, and that would be in 1950, now you got these people that are absconding with people's savings through the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's always people doing something illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, that was an episode concerning my mink farm. I didn't stay in it long enough. If it wasn't profitable, I got out of it.
So what'd you go into next?
I had these cattle, and I raised chickens, and that put food on the table and clothes on our back.
Were you married now?
Oh, yeah.
Were you married?
I got married in 1941.
Yeah, how'd you find your bride?
She was my school sweetheart.
She was? Oh, yeah. From elementary school on?
High school.
What was her maiden name?
Russell.
Elizabeth Russell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's still with me.
Oh,
still
that's
with
precious.
Me. And here she is. This is the only thing I brought, is a picture of her at a mink and...
Did you really? Oh, that's so neat.
She's in one of those catching cages.
Oh, that's so neat. Wow. He's got a picture here of his bride with a mink in a catching cage.
Yeah.
That is really neat.
You got it dated.
Oh, it's dated.
Is it a date on it?
No. Not that I can see. I don't see it on there.
No. Elizabeth B. and Lord's Adult Male Breeder. Black Yukon mink. Original stock.
Wow, that's so neat. Now, what did you think of your mink farm?
Most of the things I've been delving in, she hasn't approved of.
Uh-huh.
But I think she liked that all right. I was making my main income from raising broilers because it was popular in those days.
Okay.
And you could get a nice little hunk of money every time you sold your chickens.
Uh-huh.
And this was a sideline that I thought might
catch on, right,
but it didn't, and the Russians put me out of business.
Now, what did you get into after that?
Well,
I've heard about some famous pigs that you had.
Well, before the pigs are about following, I this same brother-in-law of mine, not the one that had the poultry house, the broader house, but Charlie Watson, my sister's husband, he and I started, we went down Carolina and bought a trawler, and we outfitted it here.
Mm-hmm.
And started sea climbing out of Ocean City.
Okay.
And we did it until the plant in Cape May, it run us out of business too. They went south at that time. Shortly after we got into it, and bought shrimp boats. For some reason or other, the shrimping industry went bad for a period of time in Florida, and they went south and bought company boats and put workers on the boats and laid off independent boats.
Wow.
So I came back home to Chincoteague and we changed our rig over from a sea clam dredge to net fishing.
Uh-huh.
So we went trawling for flounder, just like they're still doing.
Uh-huh.
Only it's more scientific now with more equipment. And we pulled nets out here and caught flounders and what they call round fishing, which you get porgies and croakers and trout. Well, oh, and while we were doing this, it leads me, you know, one thing leads to another.
Uh-huh. We have to.
As we would go daily, we would be pulling up tons of undesirable fish, mainly sea robins.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Charlie, I said, look, we're not catching many good fish, but we're getting tons of this trash fish. I said, let's investigate that, see if we can't dehydrate them. So, well, sure enough, right now at Blake's Point, my father before me had dredged into the marsh up where Blake's Point is, and that's still there. So we put a little factory down there and got somebody with trucks here, Walt Biden, to go to Baltimore. I made some phone calls and found some used cookers, just like they use over here to the poultry byproduct place.
Mm-hmm.
And we started making fish meal.
That's a neat idea.
And
good
all
idea.
The trawlers, we bought their scrap fish.
Uh-huh.
And then that went until the 62 storm, and that wrecked everything and put us out of business. And at the same time, our government financed Peru with this anchovy meal, fish meal,
uh-huh.
And they flooded the market.
Remind me, nobody won business.
I don't know. He's done pretty good. He has an entrepreneur spirit.
Yeah. During the 62 storm, that was an easy way out. The Lord, I suppose, put us out of business to our benefit. So you have to look at something different. I was in a depressed sort of state following that. I think that was probably about in the 70s. I don't know if I skipped anything in the meantime.
I still want you to get to the pig story. Have we gone by them?
No, this occurred about the same time. I had the pigs the same time. During the same, I never had less than two things at any one time.
Right. If something doesn't work, then something else will. That's the same way Elvis. He has, if something's not in, then he can try something else. You just keep going until you make enough money to support your family.
It's foolish. I mean, you'll starve to death on one if you don't find something better.
To back it up.
So you always find something better, and even though it don't last very long.
Right. But it gets you through.
Yeah. But anyhow. At the same time, when I was getting on, when we were fishing, really. But Johnny Manchetti still lives.
Oh, yeah, I know Johnny real well.
Uh-huh. Many a time he's brought me sharks. I mean, tremendous sharks that were half as long as his boat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were, he just had a little old trawler, and he'd come in with the tail hanging out over the end, and hid the thing down in the cabin. I'd take it, bring the dump truck down here, and right up near where you got your house, maybe this side of it a little ways, I dumped that shark up. He was too big. I had booms to lift it and put in his tail would be hanging out when I go up the street here.
Uh-huh.
you see cats and dogs and people following that truck.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Lord. Anyhow, what
I'm on the pig.
This is one short. At that time, I was firing in the woods. The mother hogs, the sows, were having their pigs in the woods, and they would find a place to wallow out, a nice big hole in the earth, and quite often it would be snowing when the pigs would be born. I soon saw that wasn't the right way to do it, and at the same time, other people on the mainland and all over the country were had firing houses where they'd put them up in a more efficient manner of production. So, anyhow, while they were in the woods, these fish, these extra fish, was an excellent protein for them. I was able to get corn, soybean, and supplements, but the fish were excellent. And they ate them raw, just like we eat raw oysters.
Right. Huh? Mm-hmm. Oysters.
And like the Japanese like raw sushi.
Mm-hmm. Sushi, raw fish.
It was excellent. Now, I'll take these, I expect 600-800 pound sharks and dump them up. And I'd have my hogs fenced off, you see. Otherwise, I couldn't have worked for them.
Uh-huh.
They'd just, they'd been a nuisance. You couldn't have worked for them if you didn't have them fenced off and then turn them loose into a feeding area. I'd take that shark out and sharpen up my axe, and I'd slit him from up under his gills right on back as far as I could and just leave it open. Well, this was mainly for feeding the old sows, to give them protein and amino acids. Oils and it's surprising the nutrients that's in a raw fish.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't start with just the flesh. The internal organs is what they went for to start with. But it's illegal to do that anymore.
Just, oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it's, you can't do it.
Hold on.
Am I taking too much? Or you want to continue?
Keep going. Yes, please.
This raw fish that I would feed to the breeding stock, the mothers and the adult male and females, I had to prepare it somewhat. You take a shark; he's so tough. He's,
mm-hmm.
They couldn't really get into that hide. So that's why I would slit it so that they could get to the fleshy parts. And the very first thing that those mothers, they'd line right up like a 7 or 8 foot shark.
Uh-huh.
They would line right up and empty the internal organs of that fish first.
Uh-huh.
And then there'd be enough animals around. It wasn't long before they would devour that whole fish.
Mm-hmm.
And the hide's the only thing left, and they'd go running through the woods dragging the hide.
Wow. That is amazing, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Who would have figured that out? That's neat that you figured all that out, though, and taking something that somebody's throwing away or getting rid of.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, I guess so. And look, I had the idea because when people first started in the poultry business here,
uh-huh.
the broiler business, lots of people had these big hog pots. You've seen a hog pot where the mm-hmm. farmers would kill their own and boil their water in the pot, and they used the water to scald the hair on the hogs, and get the hair off of the hogs. And they used the water. Well, anyhow.
I'm going to flip you over right here. Okay. Hold on a second. Uh-huh. Hold that thought for a second, please. About that.
Now, if you can remember just where we are now, it was about the
the feeding of the
pigs
of the piglets.
Piglets, right?
When they're nursing.
Okay.
But I would like to inject this. It wasn't long, you know. People are copycats.
Mm-hmm.
And there was others here that got the idea, and I can mention some of them. Two of them that are still living today. Might be three of them. It was three or four or five people got into this hog business. Pruno was one. You know Pruno?
Yeah.
Lord, I just had three of them on. Howard. Mitchell Howard.
Oh, yeah, no, Mitchell. He was up our way.
Mitchell. And but he didn't have any firing house. They just had a few that ran loose. Didn't have many conveniences for them. who was the other one? Oh, George Biden.
Oh, yeah. I know Mr. George. He walked on the trail with us, too. Yeah,
George Biden. He always had some hogs, and I think he still fools with some goats.
Yeah, he does.
Some goats.
Mm-hmm, he does.
Yeah, goats.
Uh-huh. Now, can you go back over the two stories that I lost? One was on the shark. Can you go over that again? And also the farrowing part about that. I'm sorry, because I lost that, so we have to go over that again. Can you talk about the shark again?
Well, the farrowing took place in the wood.
Mm-hmm.
And the animals would make their own bed, wallow out a hole in the earth because of the warmth of the earth if it's cold weather. And it'd bring a certain amount of straw, limbs, and just anything
mm-hmm.
to make a bed for them. But mainly the warmth from the earth in the winter time. But that I could see that that wasn't the route to go. And with a little investment, I built these firing houses
mm-hmm.
to get them in out of the natural elements. And
can you describe them again?
I'll describe them.
Okay,
the firing stalls were just. It was something like a hutch for rabbits, you know, only it was on a cement floor
mm-hmm.
with hot water pipes running in the cement to warm the whole floor
mm-hmm.
on temperature control. And the floor was temperature control, not the air.
Uh-huh. Just the floor.
Just the floor temperature for the baby pigs. And it became necessary that the needle teeth of these baby pigs, the first week of their life, to just nip them off with a pair of pincher
mm-hmm.
you know. It's a little small pair of pliers, really, and they don't feel it, and don't hurt them. And later on, I never did get around to docking their tails, because as they get older and concentration, just like chickens in broiler houses, you have to do certain things. If you concentrate them for production, like 20 animals to a small place to finish them out to what they call feeder pigs, if you sell them at an auction for someone else to finish them, they're a feeder pig, about no more than 75 or 80 pounds. They're getting a little large. They're anywhere from 50 to 65, 70 pounds the ideal weight to sell them for the farmer as well as the buyer. And a lot of little things like that enters the picture.
Can you talk about those stalls again, like you talked
uh-huh.
about?
Uh-huh. the animals were fed. And over they have a dung in place on the outside. The only way she gets in the stall is come in there hit on
mm-hmm.
because you always feed them right up front.
Okay.
Right on the floor. And of course they back out for their bathrooms.
Right.
And along the way the baby pigs they're encouraged by heat lamps and warmth on either side of the sow, and that saves a lot of baby pigs. You don't lose hardly any
mm-hmm.
because as soon as they get their milk, she's in a lying position,
mm-hmm.
and when they're finished, they all stop one time. She gets the milk flow off, I guess, and they rush back to a warm spot, and she stands up.
How about that?
And she and
there's just enough room, you said, for her to
lie down, just sort of
enough.
Stoop down, and then her feet flies out under one. Under one leg.
Okay.
And when she wants to get up, she pulls her feet under and gets up.
Okay.
So it works.
Pretty neat.
And I believe I did get to the needle teeth has to be, and another thing that's essential, or it was in those days, and I'm sure it hasn't changed, the fact that those baby pigs are born off of the earth. The natural earth, no matter where it is, they have to be administered iron shots.
Okay.
Shortly after the needle teeth, within a week or two,
mm-hmm.
because there's no way of feeding them the iron they need, whereas out in the natural, like an animal that runs on a farm, they get enough out of the earth to mm-hmm. iron.
That's really neat. That mm-hmm. is neat. Mm-hmm. So you have to give them that right away.
Yeah.
How about as far as shots or anything like that? Did you have to give any
vaccinations
or inoculations?
No vaccinations.
Like I know the broiler for the poultry and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
They had people who came around and did all that stuff.
No, that's all the maintenance. I call it maintenance that you had to do for them.
Mm-hmm.
That I can remember. I never did anything different. Now, and I didn't ring their nose or nothing like that.
I was going to ask you, too, if you did that, so they didn't burrow.
See, the sows that run into the woods, it didn't matter. They were right up there rooting where your house is, the whole north end.
They were free. Like the panties, they were free.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, how about that? Now, I also heard you were a plumber.
Well,
were you a plumber?
Yeah, her father. No, not a plumber. I worked in a plumbing shop.
Oh, for Mr. Dean Wayne Taylor. Did you work
for his dad? For his dad.
Right, for his dad. I knew his dad. Yeah. I remember him, yeah. So you worked there for the shop, too, huh?
Yeah. I took Mr. Blake's.
I don't remember Mr. Blake now.
Mr. Blake.
So do you know how? I guess you know how to do plumbing then too.
Yeah, somewhat.
How about that?
Especially since plastic come in.
You make it a lot easier. I'm more fun.
Everybody's a plumber. That puts Alan here right out of business.
He's electrician. He's okay.
Yeah,
he's safe.
Yeah.
Wow.
The plastic put all the plumbers. Well, no, they're still. They raised their prices and.
That's another story. All right, go back to your shark story, because I think I missed that, too, when that wasn't recorded.
The shark story? Well,
yeah,
feeding
for
the shark.
Johnny Manchetti, the shark.
Feeding the shark to the breeders. It was something about raw fish and the liver and the internal organs. The undigested food is a source of microscopic whatever the shark's eating or whatever a larger animal's eating, the undigested food is a concentration. We can't stand it, even to talk about it, but it's a concentration of edible stuff for animals.
Okay.
Like a hog.
Uh-huh.
Or anything that's a predator one on another. When one predator eats the whole animal of some other species, it's just like an oyster.
That's right. How did you get the shark up to where the pigs were?
What's that now?
How did you get the shark to where the pigs were?
Oh, I had a dump truck. Had a dump truck and loaded the thing with a boom. But it wasn't just shark. I didn't turn down anything, big or small. I had 55-gallon drums that most of the boats would take and fill, put them on the stern of their boat and put the trash in it. And we just knocked two holes in either side of these orange barrels and put a couple hooks in it and set them on the truck. And I just dumped them right out. But only what they would consume in one meal.
Okay.
There wasn't nothing left over.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on I handled the same thing into the fish, into the dehydrating plant. We didn't talk much about that, did
we?
Yeah,
you didn't talk about that yet. No.
Well, that's along the way. But it sort of coincided with the pig operation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I went to a place up in Cambridge, Cambridge, Maryland. Is that where I got the pigs? Not Cambridge.
That's where you got the mink.
The mink?
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't. Cambridge. Yeah. Where I used to go for waste material to feed these hogs, the shoats that were out, saleable. I used to go to a plant that had waste material of britter, which they would, it was Icelandic. Where the devil was that place? You go up to Salisbury,
mm-hmm.
Nanticoke, Maryland, on the bay side, and I'd pick up I had a 10-wheel truck, and I'd get 15-20 barrels of edible stuff for hogs. A meal, the britter, like, you know, you get a fish portion or a fish stick frozen in the market.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this plant did. They made fish sticks and they breaded them. But you know how it is. If you're going to bread an oyster, you have many of them, it soon it won't adhere. It's got to be real dry to adhere till. And they had the way they had barrels of it daily.
Okay.
And they had shift work even. I'd go down and get lots of that to feed the animals. When the cabbage, out here on 13, I used to get truckloads of cabbage.
What, up in Westover?
No, it was out here where they had the flea market.
The Temperanceville.
Uh-huh, a little south of Temperanceville.
Okay.
But they don't do that now. See, one thing, I mean, things come in, they
go out, just
go
like
out.
The tide.
Yeah.
It comes in, it goes
yeah.
out.
Yeah, but
I have to say, one man's trash is another man's treasure. You definitely
right.
worked that, didn't you?
Yes, anything. And they love cabbage. They love cabbage, and so do people on Chicoutimi. I'd bring truckloads of cabbage over here. Any head of cabbage that fell on the floor and that plant went in the truck.
Wow.
And it was leaves mainly, trimmed leaves off of cabbage before they put saran wrap or cellophane around them. And the trimmings is like, I fed them, good golly. See how I used a lot of sweet potatoes from over the Hallwood. When they were canning sweet potatoes there, I had three dump trucks. I kept two over there that I had a man that would take them trucks and put them under that chute. And I had one home all the time. I'd go get one, bring one. And I had it pretty well timed according to, you know, how much volume comes out of there. And he'd give me a call if the second truck that he had was being filled. And another thing about that, you learn, you innovate lots of things. The sweet potatoes was one of the best nutritional foods that I believe I fed the hogs. It was all essential, all good, but the sweet potatoes, I could go there in the fall of the year when they dug the sweet potatoes on the eastern shore. That's out of they don't grow any sweet potatoes much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Not on the shore. But I'd go there in the fall of the year when they'd start, and they would start by trucking them up from the south,
mm-hmm.
from the Carolinas and Georgia, and canned them up here. And I'd get the waste. And I dumped these, I had cattle up there at the time, and one episode there, I'll just inject this if I don't get off in the woods. I had cattle there,
uh-huh.
these same cattle I went to Ocean City to get, and they were, I mean, this is probably 10 years into into having them, the cattle. And I got these hogs. Well, I had to keep the cattle separated from the hogs because of these sweet potatoes. But they broke through one time. But to give you an idea how I stored these, I took these 55-gallon drums, which I got from the canning factory. They used caustic soda to peel the potatoes. Before they can the potato and cook it in the can, they pack it in the can and cook it in the can. They cut the ends off of the sweet potato. It was truckloads of trash and small potatoes. They just throw them away too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this sweet potato proved to be a tremendous. That probably was a source of my profit. Just the sweet potatoes, you know. You look at any one thing. Of course, the whole thing. The fish was cheap. The sweet potatoes was cheap, and it did a good job. But I took the with three dump trucks in the fall of the year, and it was a seasonal thing of canning them. See, because even in the south, the sweet potato crop is finished, and they plant something else. But when I could get them for about 3 months, I'd say September up till December. And I'd take these caustic barrels and fill them, make a pen. Just make a pen of barrels with one where you could drive in, back in with a dump truck.
Uh-huh.
Dump it in there, and one right after the other till you fill that whole pen full. And you would think that would be, they would rot and go away. Well, what happens with sweet potatoes, the elements, I didn't cover it or anything. If you have enough rain, enough moisture, and enough sunshine, something took place, and they were wet when I dumped them in there.
Uh-huh.
It made a crust over them with mold on it and sealed that top just like a tent, like a what do you call them, an igloo.
Mm-hmm.
From all them barrels, and I'd go in there with a front end loader and had these electric fences where I had shoots that were being grown up for market size up to 200 pounds. And I had electric fences with rubber on them that when you went on them, the rubber would stretch, but it was still electric in there. I'd take this front end loader and go in there and scoop it and go out and just dump it right on the ground. Those darn hogs would eat that right up, just like the fish.
Wow.
And they wouldn't fish it.
Uh-huh.
So they didn't feed anything going to market, wouldn't get no raw fish.
Right.
But I did feed the market hogs vegetables like cabbage and sweet potatoes and white potatoes, but that's a disaster. White potatoes don't keep.
Uh-huh.
They just rot away. And,
but you tried it.
But one episode that happened, I had these cattle at the time, and I kept them separated, but they got in them sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know they got drunk. They fermented. Yeah. The only thing held them up was them pine trees. One side of one pine tree to the other.
Oh, my.
That's the truth.
Uh-huh.
But they broke down a fence, got through a fence, and then got over where these barrels were. And they could reach over, you know. They had hidden nothing. They ate them darn sweet potatoes, and they got the colic and got drunk. And it wasn't long after that. It wasn't long after that. A fella that used to run the Pepsi Cola here. He was a down there, a Northampton man. Tell you who married, and he died after a while. Kenny Barrett's daughter. She worked for the Baptist Church Secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Linda.
Linda, right. Linda Hudson.
Uh-huh, Linda Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
She married that man, but I sold everyone in cattle to him.
Oh
my.
Oh, Lord.
Those are good stories. Those are really good stories. Yeah.
Well, I can back up for, you know, by individuals that's still living.
That's really neat. That's really cool.
Oh, Lord.
Now, I heard you were in aquaculture, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose I was really, you might say, what little success I had, and it must have been a success because I still got some.
Uh-huh.
And I hate to let go of it. Lou Wright's father-in-law, by the name of Kelly, was a farmer. And Lou Wright married his daughter, and I'm trying to get some dates. We don't have to have dates.
No, you're okay.
That's more recent, see, this episode. Lou Wright's father-in-law, by the name of Kelly, got interested in it and sent Lou Kelly up to Milford, Connecticut to attend a class that the federal government, the Bureau of Fisheries, it was under the Department of Interior.
Okay.
And fisheries are under, at that time, still is, I think, under Interior, like hatcheries. And but anyhow, they got interested in it. And Mr. Kelly and Lou Wright went to school and learned what he could about it. And come home, and where Lou Wright, you know where his restaurant
sure.
is.
Mm-hmm.
The farm goes right down to Watts's Bay.
Right.
They were really the people that got my interest.
Okay.
See, everybody's a copycat.
Sure.
Everybody.
Whatever works, and then they keep trying it. Yeah.
But where they failed, I think I succeeded. They were able to produce through a hatchery a numbers of tiny seed.
Mm-hmm.
First the larvae, which swims to a stage where metamorphosis from a larvae to a sedimentary type animal that falls down. If it's an oyster, he's got to have something to stick on, like an oyster shell or a glass bottle or a rubber paw or something that attracts him and gives him a rough surface. And a clam, he just rains down like the rain and goes into the sand, and his habitat's sand. Well, they failed when they made the transition from a controlled, totally controlled environment to the natural environment. That's why they
failed. Transition. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's overcome by all the people that's in the business today. They've learned to use netting and trays and bags and various things during that small seed size. That was and still is for a person that likes to manually work. I don't know if a person has the farming area, has the bottom to put the product into to let it grow. Most of the bottom's suitable, but some bottoms are more suitable than others.
Mm-hmm.
Some locations are better than others, wherever the tide rises and falls. The closer you are to the inlet, the better. And mine is right good ways from it. It takes me at least a year longer because of the natural foods that's in the water. There's more suitable foods that the clams require for growth. More near the fresh water coming out of the ocean. Anyhow.
Yeah, Elby has one. He's got them up by Tom's Cove.
How many clams do you have out in your bed now?
Very few. Matter of fact, I was just out there this morning, and I've put some red flags up. I can't, nobody in my family is interested.
Oh, no.
And I'm too old. I'm still interested, but I can't.
It's a lot of work.
It is.
It is a lot. It's Long and Elby have one together, and it's a lot of work.
If you don't care for them when it needs to be done, you lose your time.
And you got some predators, and you got the weather you come against in the wintertime.
Yeah. There's a lot of things.
There's a lot of things that come against you.
A lot of things. Yeah.
But when you do good, you do really good.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun.
It is. Uh-huh.
It's a lot of fun. And anything that you're making money at is fun.
That's one good way to look at it. You're right. Wow, that's great. Now, do you have any kids? Do you have any children?
I have one child.
Okay.
And two grandchildren. And that's it.
Okay.
And all my sisters and parents are, and my uncles and aunts. I have a cousin or two. I have some nephews and nieces.
I know the Lord blessed your land too, though.
Yeah.
You know, how did you get your land?
Some of it was gift, and others I bought.
It's amazing to see how much it's worth now, isn't it? Isn't that amazing?
Unbelievable.
It's just amazing.
Unbelievable.
Such a time as this.
Yeah. Gee.
And it's a land.
I remember telling him a couple of years ago, should have raised the price. I won't tell you what I told him. But it's about double that now. So.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
My other question for you, do you have an immunity to mosquitoes?
I think so.
I think so, too.
I must have.
To be on that end, you're doing good.
Yeah.
Now, I have to say one thing, too. I know a lot of people on the island are, like, in their 80s and 90s. And I go back and I ask them, what did you eat most of your life? So I'm going to ask you, what did you eat most of your life to live to be such a ripe age?
Well, we always had seafood. And I love, dearly love seafood. I never overeat, and I always, my wife and I each are the last people to finish our meal.
So you eat slowly?
Slowly. And my children, they're just like a pig.
Well?
I mean, we're just half finished. When
they're on to the next
meal? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's funny because the people I've asked that lived to be a long time, they eat fish. That's what they've said. They've eaten seafood most of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not only was it good for the pigs, it's good for the people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very nutritious.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And now, down our way, too, on the southern end, a lot of the shik-shik people...
I'm not to clean these glasses for it. That's the last thing...
Anyway, a lot of people on my end, too, all have big gardens. A lot of the Shinkatig men still have the big gardens. Now, how about your end on the northern end? Do a lot of people
not anymore.
Garden?
There's no old people up there. Most of the places have traded hands to where it's foreign, a foreign element. That's all over the island that goes for. And,
did you ever have gardens too? I mean, did you and use whatever you had to waste from your animals for your gardens?
I personally, I always had just maybe like tomatoes, something easy. But I never, I didn't like a garden. My grandfather, good night, potato bugs. You used to have to take a East powder bottle, Rumford East powder bottle with kerosene in it, and go knock those red potato bugs off of the leaves, to kill them, and then yellow bugs would get on your finger, and I didn't like that. And I never liked land farming, boy. I dearly love water farming.
Okay, well, good, because I was going to say, cause a lot of people down our way, they all grow their own food and can their own food. They still do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Now, the other thing, too, as far as I would like to ask too, healing wise, medicine. Uh-huh. What did you all use for medicines growing up?
Oh, well, we always had iodine for cuts,
mm-hmm.
and there wasn't no Neosporin in then days. Iodine and Mercuriclone, when it come on the market, and I don't think you can even buy Mercuriclone now, can you?
I haven't seen it out in a long time. I remember that.
But they have so many antibiotics and Vaseline-based salves.
Did you have anybody up the neck, like I know over in Aztec when I talked to Roy Jones, there were people who were good at mixing herbs and
uh-huh.
making different poultices and, you know, different things.
I got a story on that.
Okay. Good.
When my father and my brother-in-law, older sister's husband, every summer we'd take one of these floating shanties
uh-huh.
and go up to the Merlin Line and... whatever, my father and the climbing was always better on the other side of the fence, you know, the cow thinks the pasture grass is greener on the, but it was really, and they would go over on Merlin's side. It was illegal, but anyhow, we'd go up there for the whole summer, and in those days in the summertime, you didn't sell many clams and no oysters in the summertime, but now you get them year-round. The market's good, you know, pretty much year-round. But in those days, what clams you caught, and you didn't have small clams. They were all what they call topnecks or chowders, and they would, whatever they would catch, they'd bring home and plant the large clams until the winter and then sell them. Well, like I said, back to the original thought, I was going barefoot and I stuck a nail in a board on that we parked this floating shanty next to Toby's Island up near Pope's Island.
Mm-hmm.
Pope's Island Coast Guard Station was right on the Merlin Line. And I was on, I don't know, on the marsh, and I stuck this nail in my foot. Well, my father and I guess it was my brother-in-law took me to the Coast Guard station. And this is I'm just telling it as it comes. They were looking, you know, during that period of time, that was in the... early 30s, late 20s. Well, maybe. Anyhow, maybe it was early 20s, middle 20s. We went to the Coast Guard station, and they were searching for what they called, and I call it today, a capon. You know what a capon is? It's when a...
manure, right?
Yes, manure.
Okay, okay.
A fresh one.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, penicillin is made from some kind of mold
mm-hmm.
capon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the process, but it seems to me I remember reading that. It's... but I don't. I think they must do something different now. But they discovered it
mm-hmm.
that way. Anyhow, they were looking for a fresh capon. I mean, I didn't. As I got older, I always thought they couldn't find one. Boy, please me. They were going to put a poultice on my foot, a capon. And I had, you know.
You couldn't have gone to bed with that.
Huh?
You'd have had to warn her.
Yeah, your mother would love that.
But this is up, I guess it's probably 7, 8, 10 miles from Well, from the north end of Shinkatig, it probably eight miles to Polk's Home. But we'd stay up there a week, 2 weeks at a time. And but I can't remember. See, now, people did use that as a drawing, a drawing effect, a moist drawing effect.
Mm-hmm.
And now,
you use a lot of baking soda?
Well, my father used a lot, but that was a bad thing to do. He had heartburn, indigestion.
Right, that's what I've heard. They used a lot of that for indigestion.
I've seen my father take teaspoon, and Mom always had a jar with baking soda in it, and he'd take that teaspoon and put that whole teaspoon in and take a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stand it stirred up in water hardly. But they said, tell me, baking soda is bad. I mean, is it an alkali or it's just not good at all?
Mm-hmm. Or, but they used that a lot of times.
Yeah.
I also heard they had what was called patent medicine.
Yeah, like Geritol.
Yeah, they call it patent medicine instead of like when you go, yeah. That's an interesting name for it, huh?
Yeah.
One of the things that they had.
Oh, yeah. Well, we used to have, they had balsam life, and they had juniper tar, and iodine, and niter, and I can't think of them all.
Did you ever use pokeweed for anything?
What?
Pokeweed.
Yeah, I believe they did. We used to make a poultice out of, my father called it Old Field Mullet, and I know the...
That's what Roy Jones talked about, that, uh-huh. Over in Atlantic, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Old Field Mullet.
Uh-huh. Now, what did they use that for?
A poultice, like if you scratch yourself or step on a nail, everybody went barefoot and cut their feet on oyster shells and different things.
Uh-huh.
And they'd mix vinegar with it. Sometimes people put pennies in there with the copper. I don't know why the copper was in there.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Go ahead, keep going with that. That's interesting that they would. I heard that was used for cancer, too, for treatment.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Well, it might have used it, but I don't know.
There was four ingredients to it, and then the person that was telling me thought of three of them and couldn't think of the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Vinegar, and well, vinegar's not is very good edible substance.
Uh-huh.
Like on salads, and it's vinegar is healthy.
Uh-huh.
And I got a book on vinegar. Have you ever seen that book?
Uh-uh.
You don't have it in here. It's good for everything.
Well, it changes probably the pH inside your body, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it has a lot to do with the environment. Yeah,
yeah.
Things the way they grow.
But, and there's other things they would use as a poultice.
Were there any women up your way? Because I've heard there was a woman up your way who would go in and go out and pick out what you needed. And did they have certain women who were good at using the herbs and putting them together? Wasn't there a lady that was up your way? I'm trying to think of her name. I want to say her name was Lottie, but maybe not.
There was one or two over the whole island. But I can't remember anybody on the north end.
Okay.
It might have been...
She was a small lady. I can't think of her first name. I want to say it begins with an L. I want to say it was Lottie.
Rosalie.
Yeah, she would have known.
Did she mention in my life?
Yeah, there is a lady. She said that was a small, tiny lady, and she was single.
Oh, Sis Hope?
Yes.
Sis Hope?
Yeah, that's it.
She's buried right behind Rosalie's house on that ridge.
Okay.
Near the sanctified church.
Yeah, and she, what do you know, didn't she do something with herbs and she knew a little bit about the plants and different things? Okay. Well, we're going to have to wind up. I just want to thank you, Mr. Derrickson, mm-hmm. for all the wonderful information. I tell you what, you must have been an avid reader. Have you been an avid reader all your life?
Not, well, anything that's newsworthy or scientific, yeah.
Well, that's a good thing for the Chincoteague Island Library, then, that if people read more, they're going to be entrepreneurs like you when they grow up. So I just want to thank you for everything. And thank you, Mr. Bob Howe, again, for helping us do prayer.
Thank you.
Thank you.